Welcome to yet another brand new episode of SAFT Podcast. I am absolutely thrilled and excited to bring this new podcast to our audience. If you guys recall, maybe about a podcast or something ago, we had Greg Cockle on the show and we talked about his brand new book, The New Edition of Tactics. And now we have yet another scintillating apologist, another professor at Biola University, just like Greg Cockle, to speak on his new book, which is So the Next Generation Will Know. And we have none other than Sean McDowell, who for most of our audience, they might recall from his last name, McDowell, which is quite famous in the field of apologetics. And you've guessed it right. He is the son of Josh McDowell. And so, Dr. Sean McDowell, welcome to SAFT Podcast.
Hey, it's a joy to be on. Thanks for having me.
So, first and foremost, we are absolutely thrilled to have you on the podcast. And we just want to say it's an absolute honor and blessing to have someone like you appear on the podcast. And right away, kicking off, it's quite early there in the morning. And I believe that you have a very busy schedule packed for the day.
I do, yes. But I'm happy to squeeze it in because I think what you're doing is very important.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot. So as our audience might have guessed right now, you will be listening to Sean McDowell talk about his new book, So the Next Generation Will Know. And the title of the book, Sean, has always intrigued me. And like whenever I read an article or come across a writing or a blog, it intrigues me how well that title fits into the sentence. Like, for example, when I read the new book, So the Next Generation Will Know, or something like that, or when it says Sean McDowell and Jim Warner Wallace has authored this new book, So the Next Generation Will Know, we read the title into the sentence. So you never identify that is the title of the book unless there is a bold or an italic distinguishing it. So right off the mark, what made you guys pick that first part, So the Next Generation Will Know, that unique title for the book?
Well, two reasons. Number one, the book is about passing on the faith to the next generation. So it's a book of practical tools for parents, youth pastors, mentors, teachers, coaches who want ideas. How do we equip the next generation with the Christian faith? So the title matches the aim of the book. But second, in Psalm 78, you actually see the phrase where it discusses passing on the faith, so the next generation will know. And my co-author saw that and was like, hey, let's consider using this as a topic. And I think it's catchy. I think it's memorable. And it also captures what we're trying to communicate in the book.
So speaking about Jim Warner Wallace, how did you and Jim come together? You two guys come together? Because most frequently it's been you and your father, Josh McDowell, who's been this good pair of authorship, writing these amazing books. How did you two guys come together on this new project?
Well, Jim and I have been friends for a long time. His daughter was in my class. He used to go with me on these mission trips that we would take together. We've been buddies for a while. And this book, I first kind of felt a need for a book of this kind. And it really hit me that Jim brings a unique voice to the table. His experience as a youth pastor, as a parent, as a speaker to this generation, but in particular, as a cold case detective, he tends to see things a little differently than many other people do. And I heard him speak on reaching the next generation. And so I asked him, I was like, hey, would you be willing to partner with me on this book? And I think he brought a special voice that really nobody else but Jim could bring. So it was really a fun partnership.
Exactly. So really, really happy to see both of you author on this book. So, Sean, right off the mark, what is this generation that you are aiming for? Which is this generation that the book aims to address?
Well, there's a lot of titles for this generation. Some call them post-millennials, iGen, the trans generation. But the name that's really stuck is Generation Z. And it's really the first truly global generation that we have, largely because of smartphones. So I've been asked to speak internationally on this generation. And it's the first time I would even speak on a generation in another country because there's so much in common. Kids in India, South America, in America, around the world, because of Instagram, because of Facebook, because of, you know, YouTube. There's this international generation, the way they think, the way they see the world has been shaped largely because they're digital natives. So Gen Z are basically those probably 7, 8, 9 years old through college age students in their lower 20s. Millennials are gone. And there's a lot of characteristics of this generation. One is we're seeing more and more loneliness and anxiety and depression. And I think a lot of that has to do with that they're looking at screens so much and all the temptations and pressures and expectations that come along with smartphones. But really, the key to understanding this generation is just how they see the world through technology, primarily as digital natives. That's Gen Z.
So I believe that there might be a specific reason, especially like you mentioned about how this generation is a global generation with the world at their fingertips. When I say there, I mean including myself. So amongst all the other generation that you could have reached out, amongst all the other age range, why did you guys choose this particular generation to equip the parents and the church pastors to bring the Christian faith into?
Well, I think that's part of both of our heartbeats and our passion. Is I've always cared about young people. When millennials were younger, I cared about them, but probably didn't feel equipped to write a book 15, 20 years ago when millennials were just starting out. This is a generation, we each have kids who are a part of this generation. I have 3 kids, one who's 15, one who's 12, and one who is 7. So they're kind of within this Gen Z. And we're also towards the beginning of Generation Z. Millennials in the last 2-3 years have kind of moved on and the focus has shifted to Gen Z. So I thought, you know what? There's probably a lot of people interested in how this generation thinks, how they see the world, and we have an opening to reach them. So I think it's just because we love youth and this Gen Z is the new generation of youth, of young people.
Right. And also, Sean, I believe this is something that I come across a lot since I'm also involved with campus ministry. What we see is that, and this is something which really struck me about this modern generation, even in India. And the reason was I was doing about 2 months of internship back in my native place, in the southern part of India. And there I met a friend at the place I was doing my internship. So he was from a very fundamental Christian family, from a very fundamental Christian denomination. And what I came to know was, when he stepped out of his home and when he stepped out of the safety net of the church and the youth group there, and he came to this new metropolitan city, started studying on his own, staying on his own, he slowly veered off the Christian faith and eventually he became a very staunch atheist. And for me, that was, I mean, I know that there are atheists in my native language, in my native place, but for me to see someone who comes from the same denomination as I am, to see someone who comes from a denomination and a family that is very fundamental in the faith and the doctrine, to see that someone like that in India would veer off into atheism and would quote the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy in rebuttals in our conversations was absolutely mind-blowing for me. And isn't that a warning bell, a caveat for all the ministers and all the parents out there about what's happening with this Gen Z?
That's partly what motivated us to write this book, was 2 things. It was stories like you shared of people we knew everywhere we went, this sense that people would say, my grandkids, my kids, etc., the kids in my class. And second, the research itself was consistently showing that a lot of young people were disengaging the church and questionable whether they would come back or not. Now, I think there's been some statistical overstatement where people have exaggerated the evidence of kids leaving the church. So it's important we don't overstate it. But there's enough to stop and get our attention and say, okay, wait a minute. What's going on? What do we need to do better? How do we equip this generation? What does it mean to really pass on the faith to them in a way that develops a lasting faith? That's a big question that we had to really wrestle with. And frankly, for the most part, a lot of the people that have left the church and the faith were never really in it in the first place. That's a distinction some people miss. But when you have healthy relationships, teaching kids the scripture, going to church regularly, those kids are far less likely to disengage the church than the families that just casually go and don't take their faith very seriously.
So, I see that you are making an important distinction between name tag Christians and heartfelt Christians, those who just happen to be attending the church, those who have on the national statistics that they identify as Christians. So, and you said that there is exaggerations of statistics, but given that, how dangerous is this shift from faith or this exodus from faith in America alone among the Gen Z?
Well, in her book iGen, what the author Jean Twenge says is she actually sees a massive shift in the thinking of this generation. So what concerns me less is the number of kids who go to church or who don't go to church, although that's very important. What concerns me more is how deeply the secular thinking has shaped young people as a whole, whether they're in the church or not. That's a huge shift with Gen Z. According to Barna's research, the number of young people who have a Christian worldview is substantially less than millennials, Gen Xers, etc. So we're seeing this secular way of thinking and living creeping into our families, creeping into our churches, creeping into our Christian schools, and shaping the way this generation thinks and lives. That's really the concern as I look at Gen Z, is how do they think about God? How do they think about the afterlife? How do they think about relationships and sexuality? Those are being profoundly shaped by secular ideas. That's the big wake-up call. So even if your kid is still going to church, doesn't mean they have a Christian worldview. Doesn't mean they're living out that Christian faith necessarily when they step outside of the church walls. That's my concern, is how the thinking has infiltrated, for lack of a better word, kind of the church and the culture as a whole. And that's what I think the data shows that concerns me.
And Sean, most of parents would be, I guess they would be very defensive if we approach the statistics and this reality of saying that though the kids may attend the church, though the kids may be part of maybe the youth group or the youth prayer meetings in that sense, or the Sunday school, the parents would be defensive that, well, no, my kid will not do that. I see my kid pray. I see my kid do so and so. But where is the real danger that is lurking that parents or parents and youth pastors and Sunday school teachers often miss out? Where do you see that real unattended area, even for a church going, a devoted family having a child?
Well, that's a good question. I think there's probably a few things going on. I think a lot of church families take their kids to church, and in their mind, it's important to them. But when you look at how they actually live their life with their money, with their time, with their priorities, it's frankly not that important to them to live out their faith. So I think we all need to look in the mirror and say, okay, why should my kids adopt the faith that I believe? Is it real to me? Am I living it out? Does it make a difference how I spend my time and my money and my relationships? I think there's a lack for many Christian families in really valuing the things of the faith. Second, we can really only pass on to our kids what we've inculcated into our own lives. So parents also need to ask themselves, not only am I living this, but have I taken the time to develop a Christian worldview? Because frankly, most parents grew up in a very different time than it is today. So if they haven't taken the time to think through and understand what it means to live out their faith Christianly in this historical moment, then how are they possibly going to be able to pass that on to their kids? So it's both how we live and what we believe that makes a difference with this generation. So that's why I don't come out critical of parents. I try to come behind parents and say, hey, I know you care about your kids. I mean, the vast majority of Christian parents want their kids to grow up and make a difference for the faith and be happy and be successful. Of course they want that, but they feel ill-equipped. They often feel threatened by the larger culture. They just don't know where to go or what to do. So it's our job to come behind them and go, hey, here's some helpful things to think about. Here's practical ways you can engage your kids. Here's ways you can build a relationship with this generation. I think parents are hungry for that kind of resources.
So Sean, with this Z generation, what exactly is the age group that normally comes under this generation from age 7 to what is it?
So demographers will always have a kind of a range of dates. that captures a generation. Some say born as early as, like, say, 1995. Most would say about 2010 to 2015 people are born in. So basically elementary school through college age students roughly would be Gen Z right now.
Okay, because the reason that I asked that was most parents might feel a bit reluctant into bringing this hardcore critical elements of faith to someone as young as an elementary school child. But at the same time, I read in Anthony Flew's biography, There Is a God, he mentioned that the belief that a child would have by the age of 13 is something that they would end up dying with. So for a parent or for a pastor or a youth pastor who is reluctant to bring the core elements of Christian faith to someone of that age by saying that, well, they're too young to know it, don't you say that there's a danger of not equipping them at that young age, given that so much of secular content is easily available for someone that young?
I think it's a huge mistake for parents, youth pastors, teachers, not to intentionally have faith conversations and teach younger generations. They're building their faith at 6, 8, 10 years old. They are developing a kind of theology. They're learning to think about God, learning to think about the world. So of course it has to be age appropriate. It has to be in ways that a kid can understand at that stage. But actually a lot of theology, we hear about kids leaving the faith after high school. In my estimation, a lot of them have left the faith before they even get to high school. But they're still surrounded by a community that maybe embraces them and believes it, so they just go with the flow. So there's practical things we can do with younger kids. Like one thing I do with my kids is I tell them all the time, I'm like, hey, you can ask your dad anything. When I tuck my son in, I'll say, you know, you can ask your dad anything. And sometimes he asks me, even though he's 7, really good theological questions, because I get him thinking, because he's already wrestling with who is God and how does this fit into the world. And so it starts much earlier than we typically think, but we just have to do it in a way that makes sense to younger kids.
And that's why these the younger kids often ponder upon questions that we may not expect them to ponder upon. Norman Geisler, in one of his books, he says how his grandchild came up to and asked him, who created God? And the danger with the modern world is that it's so much of information is so easily available. All that they have to do is go on the internet and type, who created God? And bam, they're seeing this huge flurry of atheistic and secular content pop right in front of their eyes. And it's so easy for them to get distracted by the wrong arguments. And the often lacking arguments, and believe that there has to be a creator for God, or there is something so innately lacking in the Christian faith. So with so much to address for the parents to their children, especially given from their elementary age, elementary school to high school. And I think this is some, and I believe that this is something that has been covered in depth in the book as well. How can parents step-by-step start off this interaction, something that can be practically applicable for all age group of the children?
Well, that's a huge question for all age groups step by step. That's a massive curriculum.
Maybe just narrowing down. For an elementary school student, for an elementary school child, how do the parent engage in this conversation? Just for them.
So a couple things they can do. First thing is look for a good church, if that's possible, within, so there's a community of people that are interacting with and teaching and passing on the faith. Here's one practical thing you can do. Deuteronomy 6:4, it talks about, you know, the Lord our God is one. Talk about these things when the kids lay down, when they get up, when they walk along the road, when they lie down. In other words, look for practical ways to have conversations with kids about faith issues. That's what it's important to do. So I don't force it with my kids. I don't sit my kids down and preach to them. But I am regularly looking for opportunities to engage them in spiritual conversation. And what I do during the day is if I see an interesting article, I'll store it away and then I'll just like share it with my kids at meal time. We'll carve out meals as best we can regularly together. And I go, hey, this happened in the media. What do you guys think? hey, I was reading this in, you know, my Bible reading this morning. I learned something really interesting. What do you guys think? And I'm just looking to regularly have conversations with them. That's one thing. Second, also stuff comes up if we're watching a TV show together. If something happens in the culture, I'll jump on it and maybe we'll have a brief conversation for a minute. But the point is, one effective thing all parents can do, and probably a lot can do better, is not so much add this entire new curriculum, but look for the opportunities that are naturally there in the rhythm of our day and just use those as an opportunity to spiritually engage our kids. And when we do so, it's amazing how much progress we can make to help them learn to think Christianly.
Yes, I believe that tip of always on the lookout for anything coming up in the culture to reference and to relate and help the kids see the actuality of what is happening is very important, because it need not always take for the parents to lecture them, but maybe hinting at what is happening in the culture and in the pop culture is quite influential. So now we're about to reach the end of the podcast, and I think I need to move quite fast. Now, you've initially addressed the people whom you're addressing, the parents, the youth pastors. So, Sean, can you mention and highlight one more practical idea that parents can use to engage with their kids about the Christian faith?
Sure, that's a great question. My daughter, who's 12, came to me last summer, so a few months ago, and she wanted these new shoes that were not cheap, and I didn't want to just buy them, so I came up with an idea. I said, okay, if you watch these short 3 to 4 minute videos online, and I showed her exactly what these videos were on worldview issues or theology or on pop culture, and you write a one sentence summary of each of them, if you do 50 and just talk to me about them, I'll buy you the shoes. She actually did. She literally she watched 50 videos. It was on pro-life. Some were on socialism. Mm-hmm. Some were on the 10 commandments. And she talked with me, my wife, and my grandparents about it. Now, not every kid would do that, but it was on my radar to look for ways to teach her to think Christianly. That idea came up, and so I used it. So I actually have a YouTube channel where I do videos from 2 to 4 minutes typically, where I answer tough questions that people send in. That's a free resource parents could use with their kids. Mm-hmm. Show one a week at a mealtime. Go, hey, I've had a ton of parents tell me, hey, we just show us our kids and we talk about it. So that's a practical thing. You don't do it every day, 5 times a day, you'll exasperate your kids. But if you're like, hey, once a week, we're gonna show a short video, and I just wanna know what you think. Like, I have videos on there, you know, if God made everything, why is it wrong to smoke pot? Did Jesus rise from the dead? should a Christian have a tattoo? Like, these kinds of questions. And some are like, is the mind just equal to the brain or something like that? Which is actually a really important question. And you just show to YouTube, and you talk with your kids about it. You don't lecture it. You just talk with them about it. That's a simple resource that parents can use, and youth pastors and others that care about this generation.
And just out of hunch, those videos that you showed your daughter, were they from PragerU?
Those were the PragerU videos. Yep.
Those guys are absolutely amazing, especially when it comes to these small snippets of video that they put out.
I agree.
Sean, now we have talked specifically about how the parents can influence the kids because they have them by the side 24/7 as such. But some of the friends of who are part of the audience, whom I know, are actually part of the youth ministry, and they minister to college students and high school students as well. But they don't get these kids with them 24/7. They get them maybe in a week for an hour as part of a youth meeting or something. What can they do to help advance their Christian faith into these kids who might be shaky in their faith, who might be not attached to their parents? Or in other words, what can the pastors and the youth ministers do? Because since they don't have them 24/7, what is something that you could give them as a practical tip?
Well, I think they need to be very strategic and intentional with the time that they have. So don't set up a system just to entertain, Don't waste time. Now, building relationships and having fun is valuable time spent, but be very intentional with the time that you have to help them learn to think Christianly. So I would look down at my curriculum and I'd say, okay, what am I teaching? Does it flow naturally? And we actually have in the back of the book a suggested outline for topics to cover, ways to organize a curriculum. We have some practical ideas in there in one of the chapters that a pastor, a youth pastor could use to kind of organize their specific teaching. But I would just sit down and I'd be very, very intentional about what I teach and also how I teach it. So make sure you're working through. In the book, we talk about timeless issues like creation, resurrection, those kind of truths, but also timely issues which are relevant today, like LGBTQ issues are huge. Let's talk about those students. So make sure the content is good, but also the way that we teach is best. Sometimes pastors just lecture, or youth pastors, well, there's a time for lecture, but are we asking good questions? Are we leading in discussion? Are we doing case studies? Are we role playing? There's a lot of different teaching methods that are ultimately more successful in helping kids really learn. So I would just stop and I would take a stock of that and realize, yeah, it's hard when kids have, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 hours a week engaging in media and 1 to 2 hours in church. So we have to be absolutely as streamlined and thoughtful as possible in the time that we have.
Wow. We covered a lot of topic, a lot of areas within the short podcast. And I think it's best for everyone to get hold of the book because it covers all these areas in depth. And as I think as George Bernard Shaw says, I must stop, the record holds only so much. So thank you, Sean, for coming on the podcast and enlightening our audience about this very crucial and critical aspect of bringing the faith to this generation, a generation that is lost so fast and so frequently from among the Christian households as well.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me on.
And we would absolutely look forward to having you more frequently on the podcast. I'm sorry that you had to wake up way early in the morning for the podcast because of the time zone difference.
No problem. Happy to do it.
All right. Thank you so much, Sean. And thank you so much, audience, for tuning in and listening to the podcast. We'll be bringing out more exciting content and more podcasts and more guests coming up in the coming weeks. We have an array of top apologists and authors and philosophers and professors lined up to bring the best content for you. And do spread the word as we move higher and further with this apologetics tool into the layman's world in this new year. Thank you so much for tuning in and see you in the next one. God bless.